Well, we're glad you're here today. This is a special day in the life of our church. We've gotten into the custom of doing on this Sunday when everybody else is thinking about the Super Bowl, something, you know, super in our own church. And as we talk about the state of our church and the state of the church address, as we call it. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about the state of our church now for 2016. Now, I've seen the president do his state of the Union address, and you know, I think it's kind of fun. They get the Marine band there and they play Hail to the Chief, and he walks in and he's shaking hands and they're all applauding. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll try that someday. And you know, I'll put the you know, song on the CD player and I'll start marching in the back. And you know, I suggested to the staff and they all just laughed. I don't know. It wasn't going to happen that way. So anyway, but we do want to talk a little bit about the state of our church. And actually, the first thing I want to do is something a little unusual. If I can see the deacons out there, are they about ready? I want to take a minute. I want to introduce you to our leadership team. I realize that in our church, everybody knows some of the deacons, but actually we realize not everybody knows all of the deacons. And that's kind of an interesting thing as we have grown over the years. So what I want to do is I want to introduce the deacons, and I see that some of them are here. Some of them are on vacation actually this week. They had that planned for a while. Some of them, I think, have trucked off to their ABFs and not quite made it down here. But come on up, guys. The ones who are here, come on up. I'm just going to ask them to take a minute and introduce themselves. And I think if you guys will remember that we're on a very tight time frame here, really tighten up your comments. We want you to hear a little bit about what they do, because we have our deacons divided into six different groups. We call them portfolios. They carry a certain portfolio for the team ministry. We have one that does administration and finance. We have our global outreach team or missions team. We have a team that works with our men's discipleship, a team that works with our adult education, a team that works with what we call our first touch ministries, following up on people who are new to our fellowship. And then we have the last one just went out of my mind. We have the CLC, the use of our new facility out there, the Community Life Center Evangelism Team. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves, just give you their name and what group they're on. And one from each group is going to say just something brief about the ministry they're involved in. Boy, giving it to Chris, I know, is tough because he's almost as hard to get quiet as I am. But we'll give it a shot.
I'm Chris Link, and I'm on the portfolio for the Christian Life Center and the evangelism, and these two guys are on the portfolio also. Okay, so one of the things we hope to accomplish this year, every Saturday we have Upward here. We have basketball and then soccer after that, and you have a lot of people who are already church people coming from other churches, but there's a really large percentage of them that are unchurched, who don't know much about the gospel, if anything at all. And you've heard Justin and Pastor talk about, you know, as a member coming out on Saturday mornings for a short period of time and just introducing yourself and letting them know you're from Washington Heights. And at our deacons retreat, we heard some of the guys talk about how there's a lot of people who say, hey, I've been coming here and I've never met anybody from Washington Heights, and you've got a mission field right here coming to your church on Saturdays, and then they practice during the week. So you'll be seeing us coming to your classes, your ABFs, over the course of the next few weeks, months, to and just kind of give you more information and encourage you to use this as an opportunity to share your faith. Tell them who you are and tell them who we are at Washington Heights.
My name is Paul Orm, and Chris is exactly right. For those of you who don't know, we had 450-plus people right over here in this gym yesterday. So huge opportunity. They're even coming to us, right? So,
I'm Dean Schuler, and I'm happy to be serving with these two. And just pray for us as we take on this mission, and hope all of you can join us.
I'm John Knost, and I serve on the Finance Committee, along with Jason Edom here and John Burkhart.
I am Jason Edom, and with the finance team, we are working to, you know, keep things running smoothly, but also we're looking at setting up a cadence, a regular schedule to get out to the ABFs and let you hear from us as how things are going.
My name is Mike Krumloff, and I'll be assisting the Global Outreach team with helping them more effectively meet the needs of our missionaries. And as far as I know, I'm the only member on that team right now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Comer. Tim and I are on the men's discipleship or men's portfolio. And what do we do, Tim? There's all kinds of opportunities for guys to connect with each other and connect with God. And that is really our main goal this year.
As Matt said, I'm Tim Quast, and John Burkhart's on our team as well. But yeah, we're really looking for the hearts of men this year, trying to get out there and see where real transformation happens, which is in the heart. So we're trying to connect there, like Matt was saying. And so be it Blitz, be it men's discipleship groups, we encourage all men to get out there and rub shoulders and get to know the other guys in the church. It's going to be beneficial, I guarantee you.
Hi, I'm Wally Hoppe. I serve with Jerry Grimson and Greg Poe on the Adult Christian Education. That would be the ABFs, the Adult Bible Fellowships, and I think Colossians 2:7 and the home groups. And this year we're going to be looking at ways that we can help the leadership of those groups out, looking at curriculum and that kind of thing.
I am Don Wolf. I serve on the First Touch portfolio with Brett Winters and Ken Ross. Brett's going to tell you what we do.
Hey, guys, I'm Brett Winters. As Don said, Ken Ross is also on our portfolio. We're the First Touch portfolio. And there's a lot involved with that. You know, whether it's Discover the Heights 101, which is going on right now in the back, and Jerry is facilitating that. We also are going to be looking over the greeters, the ushers, our follow-up. And our bottom line, we just want to improve and increase the number of touches we have when people come into our doors. And so we're looking at that right now and just trying to see ways that we, you know, either can make better what we currently have in place, maybe take best practices from other churches. Special shout out to Rudy, as he's been working with us as well this last year, and he's been a blessing to have on our team too. So, thanks.
I'm Greg Poe. I get the opportunity, as Wally said, to serve with he and Jerry, and as well, it's a real opportunity. I think we would all say this, to get to serve with one another. And the whole idea with what we're doing, with everybody's doing, is it's all about relationships and creating more, diving deeper into more, and kind of meeting people where they are in their lives and introducing them to Jesus Christ and really help disciple them along the way. So that's who we are.
This is your 2016 leadership team, yeah. So who are we as a church? That's an important question. And I'm happy to say that Washington Heights is a good and strong and healthy church. I mean, look at me today. I even put a tie on, you know? No, we talk about the differences. We say it's not what you wear. And so, you know, some people, you know, sometimes it's blue jeans and sometimes it's a T-shirt. And I will say we've noticed that since Justin has moved out of the youth ministry up to the outreach and evangelism position, he actually wears shoes now, not just flip-flops. So things happen in life, but, you know, Some of you, you know, I just you know, some of you, you feel like that this is good, and it is, it's great. And that's why I say some people, it's all about, you know, the shirt and tie, and some people it's all about the cutoffs and T-shirts. And, you know, if our hearts are right with God, that's what it's all about. But today I thought I'm gonna honor those guys who are out there looking good, and I'd try to at least catch up with them a little bit. But in the end, that's not really what our church is about. We want to talk just briefly about what's happening at Washington Heights. I'm going to fly through this. The first thing I'm going to say is that these numbers are not designed to be precise. We don't actually track that many precise numbers. That's not what drives us in our hearts, but we do want to know where we are and what God is doing. So here's some of the things we work with. It starts with the fact that we have 471 actually certified, registered, been through the process members of our church. That's where we start. We have 386 people that we call active non-members. These are people who are regularly involved in our church. They're in an ABF. They're in our services. They come and they're part of our programs. They give and support our church with their finances and their time and their energy. They've never transitioned into joining our church officially, okay? That means we've actually got 857 people who call Washington Heights their family. Now, if you're like me, you go, wow, that's really cool. And then I look around and you kind of go, but they're not here today, are they? And that's one of the things we found is a bit of a challenge and a struggle. On any given week, we have about 450 people, men, women, and children, that come into our facility on a Sunday morning and are part of our program here. Okay? So that's a big spread. Well, that's one of the things we're learning about attendance patterns in the church today. Some of these people are simply maybe no longer directly engaged with us in those active non-member roles. They come occasionally, or they're here, you know, a couple times, but they also maybe are involved somewhere else. That happens. A lot of the things we see is that our society is so fluid. Today, I know several people who are out on vacation, out traveling. It's time to go and see grandma and grandpa. It's time to go and take the kids on a football or a basketball or a gymnastics or a ballet weekend or something. And so everybody's traveling around, or go see the grandkids who are in you name a state, anywhere within a day's drive. So we find that our attendance patterns are a little fluid. And what's tricky about that is we may not see the same faces every week. We may see the same number of faces, but they may be all different. So that also means, how are we communicating, and you know, how do we get the message out effectively? And so all these things are challenges for us. We're looking, you know, more and more at social media and email and ways to keep in touch with people, because it's no longer true that everybody is in every service. That's just not the world we live in. But those are some of the things that we wrestle with. We feel that there are about 600 people who regularly call Washington Heights their church home. Out of that 857 that are in the mix, we know that not everybody is fully involved, but what we would say is about 600 people that call Washington Heights their church home. So, you know, when people say, you know, how big is your church, or how many people attend your church, that's a question I hate. I don't really like that. I think every one person is important, and we just try to minister to the people as God, you know, allows us to, and we want to focus on the hearts, not the numbers. And yet, you know, that's an important sense of just who we are ministering with. So there you are. You tell me who we are, and we try to figure it out, but that's how we work each week. Here are some of the things that are going on, though, with those people who are part of our church. We have 150 children in Awana, and 58% of those children are not part of Washington Heights Baptist Church. More than that, we have more than 50 Awana leaders each week that are engaged and volunteering their time. We also have 60 boys and girls in upward soccer, and 22% of those have no church at all. Now, we made a distinction this year with upward. We were able to ask the questions a little bit differently. It's not just, are they not part of Washington Heights, but if they're part of another strong evangelical church and they happen to come to our Upward program, okay, we want to be encouraging to them, and we're thankful for that, but we really want to know those kids who don't have a connection with a church. They don't hear the gospel. They don't have the support of Christ in their lives. So that's what we started asking. 60 boys and girls, 22% have no church. We have about 140 boys and girls right now in Upward Basketball. 33% of those boys and girls and their families have no church relationship. So there's direct contact with people. It's like when Greg Poe was there yesterday doing his halftime program, presenting the gospel to those people. Those were people, many of them, who do not have a church relationship, and we're excited by that. 60-plus Upward volunteers each week are involved in making that program work. We have over 200 children who were registered this last year in our VBS program. 58% of those people were not related to Washington Heights, and over 100 VBS workers. And here's the thing. You look at those 50 in Awana, those are different than the 60-plus that are in Upward, because, you know, we have very few that cross over and could do both programs. They're both very demanding programs. You look at that 100-plus in VBS, and you see we have a large number of people who get involved and help support our various church programs, particularly in our children's program. This one I find very interesting. We have 110 regularly who attend Young at Heart. 98% of them are not from our church. What's interesting is that although Young at Heart started as a program here at Washington Heights, as it has moved up in years, we found that our people don't seem to get involved as much anymore, but people from other churches love to come in and get involved, or people from the community love to come in and get involved, and we find that a very intriguing outreach. Now, we're actually going to focus this next year on how we get more of our people to be involved in our senior ministries. Maybe it's not going to be Young at Heart exactly, because I don't know what the reason is, but some of you just won't come. Okay, if you won't come to the mountain, we'll see if we can't bring the mountain to you. But we want to see our own people involved in our senior ministry programs. Oh, it jumped ahead of me. 85 adults enrolled in our 6 home groups, 50-plus men in discipleship and men's fraternity, 40-plus women involved in the women's Bible studies and mentoring. I say plus because, again, I know for a fact that just this last week, both among the men and the women, some of you brought friends and neighbors, and they never got counted. We don't know who they... That's why I say our numbers aren't precise, but they're very, very strong, at least understanding of where we are. And I love the fact that we have people who are being invited to these discipleship groups and Bible studies that we don't know. I hope that we get to know them very soon and that they get to know Christ. Again, what's happening here, we find that we have 35 students about on average who every week are down in the student ministries program. 16 of those will go on a mission trip along with about 15 adults. We'll have about 30 on that missions trip this year. What's really challenging about this is we have 94 who are enrolled on the student roster. And so again, fluid in how they attend and reaching out and trying to get these kids to be, you know, involved every week. And there's a lot of challenges with that. But Josh is doing a great job in trying to touch all those lives. But we have this connection with people who maybe aren't always here and yet who our church is constantly ministering to. There are about 40 women enrolled in the MOPS program, and 80% of those are not part of Washington Heights. What I really was excited about this year, though, was not just all those things, but the way we supported ministry around the world. Our gifts to Christ this year, I'll just tell you right now, we set a record. That was cool. In my years here, we used to feel really strong when we could set a $50,000 goal and have the confidence we might meet it. I'll tell you, we only broke that goal one time in the years I was here. The last couple of years, with the economy being down a little bit, we had a hard time meeting a $40,000 goal. Now, money isn't everything, but it tells us a little bit about how we feel about the church and how we feel about how excited we are about supporting our missions and our ministries around the world. This year, we had $59,560 come in for gifts to Christ. And yes, you can applaud that. That's cool. So we were able to provide all of the programs and projects that we had presented to you, and the missions team is out there now looking on for the best projects out of the rest that were presented that we can fund with that overage. So, you know, an exciting time in Gifts to Christ. We sense that there are also groups that are introduced to our facility. Now, as opposed to those ministries like Upward and Awana and VBS and Young at Heart, where we're very actively there teaching and speaking and sharing the gospel. In this case, there's a lot of times we're just making contacts with community facilities or supporting area ministries that allow us to be both a good neighbor and to open doors for the gospel later. But we have a chance to do that through the Dayton Christian Basketball and Cheerleading, through a senior men's basketball league. Miami Valley Women's Center uses our facilities for several events through the year. We have some Boy Scout troops that we work with. None actually meet here as their troop headquarters, but we work with them and support them and have a chance to talk with those families and those boys. We have the Classical Conversations homeschool program, which is meeting with us. We also have the Miami Valley Citizens Concerned who come in, and our people are involved in that. So members of our church are connecting with those people as well. The Dayton Diggers Volleyball League works in our church, and we have a chance to get to know their leadership and their players, the Dayton Flight Basketball League. As we think of these kind of things, we're looking again at those contacts out into our community and with people who maybe don't have any church connection at all, and now they say, oh, that church I go to play basketball, maybe I can talk to them about this or that issue in my life. So these are exciting things that we have here at Washington Heights. And when you look at that whole list, and there's things that didn't even make it up there. I forgot to put up the 2-7 group. There's about 17 people right now in the year-long Colossians 2-7 Bible study group. And there are ministries that happen that our people are very energetic about that we don't always even directly track in the office. And when I say that, I also say that's apart from all the regular church things like what? Like ABF and Sunday school and worship and all those things that we do. And I hope when you hear that, you see the number of people are involved. We had over 400 at the block party with over 100 volunteers there to interface with those people. I hope you get excited that Washington Heights is a good, strong, active church that is fueled by people who are involved and give of their time and their talents and their resources so that the gospel is going out and the work of Christ is supported. These are your brothers and sisters, and I can stand here and say the state of Washington Heights Baptist Church is good. We are strong, and we are healthy, and we are doing many outstanding things in the work of the kingdom of God. And you should be excited about that, and you should feel an appropriate sense of satisfaction and even an appropriate pride when people say, you know, where do you go to church? And you say, well, I go to Washington Heights. That's a good thing. We have a good reputation in the community. We have good work that's accomplished for the kingdom of God. Now, what are some of the challenges we face? Well, one of the challenges is recruitment and retention. We found that it's an ongoing reality that people are very, very busy, and we have a number of programs, and knowing which ones and all to recruit for and then retain those people, that's an ongoing challenge that we have. And we have to look at the right way to balance people's gifts and ministries. We are always looking for that good match between somebody's gifts and ministries so that they're where they can serve with grace and freedom and efficiency. We don't want to burn people out. We also don't want to have people rust out, you know. It's that balance of keeping active and keeping involved. So that's one of our biggest challenges, recruitment and retention in our ministries. Another one is moving from what we call contact to Christ. That's probably the biggest challenge we're facing this coming year. You heard it was 500 and what yesterday? 585 different people were in our building yesterday as part of Upward. Now, they all heard the gospel at some point in that presentation. They all know who we are. I've been stopping in and going around and meeting people. I've met several people from our community who had no other contact with our church and got their name and they got my name and we thanked them for being here and they showed me who their student was out playing and all that's exciting. But our next challenge is how do we go from a contact with somebody to really introducing them to Christ, allowing them to come and know the person of Christ. And that's the focus we as a staff and we as a church are going to be on in the coming year, is moving all these connections we have made now to the place where they can come to know and trust Christ as their Savior. And so we'll be asking you to get heavily involved in that, be part of that in the time ahead. We're talking about adjusting to new staff members. Some of you remember we had a young man here, Robert Rhodes, who we've been talking to. We're going to bring him back, I think, and have him do a more full-blown trial with us in the near future. We hope to pull that off soon. But Robert's a wonderful young man, very insightful. He's just graduating from Cedarville in the area of worship and music. And I was talking to him after the Sunday he was here as a guest worship leader. And I said to him finally, after we'd gone through many, many details, I said, Robert, do you have any questions for me? He said, well, Pastor, I'm curious. He says, you have a very young staff. And I was kind of surprised because I'm thinking, you know, Charlie and Rich and Roger and me. And boy, nobody's called us young in a long time. And then he went, oh, no, no. I mean, and I realized, you know, we've got Kevin DeLucky, who's 32, and Justin Hoppe, who's 32, and Josh Tuttle, who's 26. And he looked at me, this young man, and he said, are you okay with, you know, interviewing another young guy? And I'm like, you know, first of all, how mature that he even had the sense to ask that question. That says a lot about him right there. But you know what? We're in a transition time. And we have a lot of new staff and in new positions. And we are suddenly a young staff. And it looks like, you know, as Charlie makes his transition now, it's going to be me and Roger trying to herd the young guys along. I don't know. Or they're going to be dragging us along. I'm not sure which. But you know, I want to say this. We're going to have some time now to adjust to this new staff relationship. And we'll have to have some patience on all of our parts, and we'll have to work through how it's all going to look. But you know, I'm excited about this. I just feel that God is putting a team in place that he's going to use for maybe the next 20 years to do great things here at Washington Heights. And it's by his hand. And so we'll all be working together through that staff transition. Budget. You know, nobody likes to talk about money, but it's at the same time something that we all have to realize is there. God gives us these blessings so that we in turn can use them for his glory as stewards. And you know, we've had a hard time the last couple of years. Our budget has grown, but very, very slightly. And we've taken on some new responsibilities in adding these staff members, trying to really focus on outreach and evangelism. Justin's position now is a brand new position we haven't had before. And as we look at some of these things, we've made some commitments. And in our missions and in our programming, we've made some commitments. And right now, I have to be honest, if you've looked at the numbers we publish each week, we're not making our budget this year. So we have to ask some hard questions about what that means in the life of our church, in our commitment as members of the church and followers of Christ. How are we going to respond to that need? And you'll be hearing more about that in the coming days. Facility maintenance and improvements. You know, we went through our great opportunity to put up our new facility, and that's wonderful. It's already 7 years old. And some of the buildings here are, you know, 50 years old. We've got one building that's got a 20-year roof that's on its 47th year. You know, so we have some maintenance and some improvements that we're going to be addressing, and you'll hear about that. You see the new roof that went on the flat part of the old children's education wing over there. We got that done this last month, and so hopefully some of those leaks and even waterfalls that you were experiencing in the hallway will be ended now. But you'll be seeing a lot more as we try to address some of the facilities that we have in our church. But more than anything else, we want to be involved in expanding discipleship. We want to see every person in our church and our community following Christ and following him faithfully. And I'm going to ask Pastor Hoppy to come up for just a minute and share some things that are on his heart about how we address that expanding discipleship.
In the few minutes I've got here, I want to just share something that God has been doing in my heart. Recently, I came across Luke chapter 10. We won't take the time to go there. But in Luke 10, we see the parable of the Good Samaritan. And that story, that parable there, the lessons that are taken out of there have sparked ministries around the world. The Good Samaritan Hospital, Samaritan's Purse, all these different places that have used the identity and the thought behind that parable, the punchline of that parable, to do good all around the world. The danger with this parable, though, is to focus on the punchline, on the end. And it's so easy for us to forget that whole story started when the lawyer came up to Jesus and asked, "How can I inherit eternal life?" He wasn't saying, I need a business model or a ministry model for how to outreach better. He was looking for how he can inherit eternal life. And Jesus answered his question with a question. And he says, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And the lawyer says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Jesus says, "Go and do likewise." So then the story goes on, and we hear the story of the man, the Jew who was beaten up, and then the Good Samaritan comes along and saves the day, right? And so at the end is Jesus says, who was truly a neighbor to this man? And he says, "Well, it was the Samaritan who came along and took care of him." It's so easy for us to focus on that, and then that's how we start to think about, oh, we have neighbors all around the world because these are the people that God has called us to be involved with. This is the kids in Nicaragua or the people in Togo, West Africa that we build the hospital for. Those wonderful things that we can do all around the world. But we just fly right past the heart of that parable. Right in the middle, Jesus talks about a priest and a Levite, professional believers, right? These are professional people. These are professional, right, religious people. He just flies right past that. We just fly right past that and realize that the man who was on the road was in their path. This was a Jew walking past a Jew. This is a person that God had placed in their path, and they walked right past. And I've been reading a book right now that talks about just this idea. This book is called The Art of Neighboring. And in the book, they challenge you they talk about the fact that what if Jesus really actually meant that we should love the actual neighbor next to us? Let's not fall into the priest and Levite's sin of walking past the people God has placed literally in our own path. The book in here, the cover here actually has a picture of 9 squares, and the center square has this orange-colored house. The exercise in the book is actually for you to consider your house being the center square. So all of you do that in your minds, just picture. Okay, so the 8 squares around you, those are your neighbors. Whether your neighbor is literally next door to you, like in my neighborhood, there's about 55 feet between my door and my neighbor's door. Maybe yours is 2 miles away. Maybe your nearest neighbor isn't across the street, but they're above you. 10 feet if you live in an apartment. Nobody's off the hook. You have eight people who live in your circumference around you. The challenge is fill out in each square the first name of each block. The person, people who live in that house, the first names. When I took this test, I failed. 50% was what I was hoping to catch, and I didn't get that close. I know Mike, and I know Susie, and I know Tim, but the guy behind me and the weird guy next door, and I don't know that. The second level of the test is, what is something about that person you can't learn by observation? So it requires an actual conversation. So the red car for Mike doesn't count. I don't get to put that in the box. The third level of the test is list their hopes and dreams, or their fears, their insecurities. The whole idea is that you can't love someone that you don't know. You can't love your neighbor the way Jesus talked about loving your neighbor if you don't love them the way you love yourself, which means you have to know them like you know yourself. So in the coming year, you'll be hearing some opportunities, some ways that we're going to try and engage you, yes, you, each you, in reaching your physical neighbor, the people who God has placed in your path, so that we don't miss the people he has designed for us to engage with. So be looking for that in the coming year.
So I hope you feel excited about the fact that you're involved in a church which is actually doing some great things for the glory of God and has the heart to reach out and do great things among our community for the people who don't know Christ. So looking forward, what is this going to look like for our church? What's the challenge that we can pick up and hold as the members and friends of Washington Heights? I want to read just a quick passage for you. And with that passage in mind, I want to talk just a little bit about this idea of looking forward and what kind of a church we will be. And I want you to listen to this passage. It's from Psalm chapter 78, verses 1 to 8. But as you listen to it, just listen to the relationships, the personal relationships that are talked about here. The psalmist says, "Give ear, O my people, to my teaching. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings from old, things that we have heard and known that our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, but tell them to the coming generation. The glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders he has done. He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and that they should not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation whose heart was not steadfast, whose spirit was not faithful to God." Here is the simple truth. Christianity is always one generation from extinction. And the reason is because no one is born a Christian. Did you ever think about that? No one is ever born a Christian. And so every new generation has to be introduced to and taught who Christ is and the reality of the Word. Now, when Jesus came to the world, he came with a message. I'm just going to read from Mark chapter 1 a little bit about that message, because that sets our tone for this work we have. I lost my little flyer here, so give me just one second while I pull it out. There we go. We were studying last week the temptation of Jesus. It says, "The Spirit immediately drove him into the wilderness, and he was in the wilderness 40 days, tempted by Satan. And when he was with the wild animals, the angels were ministering to him." This is Mark chapter 1, verse 12 and 13. Right after that, we see in verse 14 this: "Now after John was arrested, Jesus came into Galilee, proclaiming the gospel of God and saying, 'The time is fulfilled and the kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel.'" That's the first of Jesus' ministry. We talk about this thing that we call the gospel, but it's the good news. It's the reality that Jesus came, and he came to save. He came to redeem. He came to change the lives of people. And we need to be a church that's about the gospel, about the good news. You know, churches can be about a lot of things. They can be about providing benevolent help, and they can be about providing encouragement for families, and they can be about providing support and needs and missions, and they can be about providing support for people who are caught in addictions. And churches can be about a lot of things. But I want to tell you, at the core, a church is nothing if it's not about the gospel. If it's not about the good news that Jesus came to redeem people who were lost and caught in sin. And so as we look forward, we want to be the church of good news. And here's the thing I want to tell you about the good news. The good news, it's not new. It's not new. It's been around for a long time. You say, well, why do we call it good news? Because it's new to this generation. It's new to these people that have never heard. And here's the thing I want to point out. And this is exciting, and it's actually a little bit scary. Some of you had a chance to meet John Ensor. John Ensor is the director of Passion Life. It's a right to life, an abortion, I mean, a pro-life, abortion, opposed abortion, pro-life, help for women's ministries program that's actually worldwide now. But John Ensor was the guest speaker at the Miami Valley Women's Center gala this last fall. And I got to tell you, he really got to me. Because he was talking about the history of the pro-life movement, and he actually took it back into issues in the Bible and where pro-life is found throughout Scripture, and he built it long before 1972 and the question of abortion that rose here in the United States, and how pro-life has been effective at meeting many, many needs and realities. And he said, sometimes I get out among people and they think, well, the job's already done. And he goes, no. He goes, pro-life isn't new. He goes, it's just our turn. You know, I thought about that. I thought about that not just as it relates to the thing that John Ensor said, but to so many things. I realized that's the new news of the gospel. The gospel isn't new, but it's our turn. Because that truth that the gospel has to be preached, has to be told, has to be passed on, has to be communicated to every new generation, that's the foundational truth that all of us are left here to experience as believers. We will worship better. We will know Christ better. We will sing better. We will praise better. We will Bible study better. We will live better, more sanctified 5 seconds after we're in heaven than after a lifetime on earth. So why does he leave us here? Because we are his witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and the ends of the earth. And it's our turn to share the good news. And here's the neat thing about it. The good news isn't new. It's our turn. But the message is clear. And it's our story. Remember your Romans road, Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God? You know, we read that, and you may read it, and you may kind of say to yourself, well, I get it. That means that, well, I've done something bad. I've screwed up somewhere. I've broken a commandment. And well, yeah, that's true. We all have. But you know what I find more subtle about that great statement? I find that all of us start out as unbelievers. Nobody is automatically a Christian. Nobody inherits the faith automatically. And that means that for you, there was a time in your life when you did not believe. And what I want to ask you to do right now is I want you to ask you to go back and I want you to remember that time. I want you to remember that time when you did not believe. Now, for some of you, it'll be easy. You'll say, I remember that time I was doing this or that or the other thing in my life. I was involved in college, or I was at work, or I was in the military, or I was serving here, or maybe I was a kid. But boy, I remember my life before I knew Christ, and okay. But you know what I'm especially aware of? There are some of us here in this room that were raised in the church with Christian parents who told us Bible stories from the time we were young, and we kind of scratch our heads and say, I'm not sure I remember a time when I didn't know the stories and didn't know Christ. And then I'm going to say, really? Because I'll bet one of three things was true. There was a time when you really doubted. You may have been raised with the stories and in Sunday school and at church, but there was a time when you said, I don't get it, or I don't want it. There may have even been a time when you said that, I reject it, I don't like it. And if all those things don't ring a bell, I know this. There was a time when you looked in the mirror and you said, boy, if I'm a Christian, I don't act like it. Because you knew your heart and you knew your actions. And why do I say that? I say it because when it comes to the gospel and it comes to being witnesses, I want you to know that it starts with each one of us. It starts with our story of unbelief. Yes, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That means you have sinned. That means I have sinned. That means we have sinned. That means every one of us started out someplace as unbelievers. And you know what? That's where we connect to all the other people who are unbelievers. We don't come in with the gospel and say, oh, I've got this great thing in my life and you need it so badly. You know, we come in and we say, wow, do I understand right where you are? Because I've been there too. The amazing thing about the gospel is that the message is clear because it's our story. A little later in Romans, remember when it says in Romans 10, 9 and 10, that if we confess with our mouth and believe in our hearts that we will be saved? You know what I realize about that? That for each one of us, it's a matter of decision. It's a matter of will. There is a time when we were unbelievers, and there's a time when we are believers. And in the middle there, at some point, we made the choice to believe. Now, I don't want to get into all the theology of how that choice unfolds in our hearts and the working. I'm just going to say this. In practical, everyday terms, there was a point in your time, in your life when you made the change. And I want you to remember that right now, too. For me, you know, my mom and dad tell about a time when I was 4 years old, when almost 5 years old, when I was coming home from Sunday school and I was quoting the lesson and I was asking some questions and they told me about Jesus and accepting him, and they tell me how I knelt down and I prayed a prayer and I accepted Jesus as my Savior. And you know what? Maybe I did. I've seen some pretty bright five-year-olds. I'm not saying I was one of them. I've just seen some. But if I did that, you know, the truth is I don't remember that. Now, I remember a time when I was in eighth grade, when I was at camp, and you know, frankly, it was one of those good old hellfire and brimstone, Jesus is coming back again messages, and I was sitting out in that pew as a camper, and I thought, well, I don't want to miss it if he's coming back, and boy, I know I'm a mess sometimes, and I got up, and I walked an aisle, and I talked to a counselor, and you know, that's the time I remember that I made a choice to change for Jesus. But then, you know, I'll tell you what, there's another time, too, because I went through some real doubts. I went through some real times of questioning. Did I really believe in the Bible and believe in the divinity of God and believe in heaven and hell and eternity? And I remember the time between my senior year in high school and college when I had to answer those questions for myself. And so I did. I remember when I said, okay, Lord, you can have all of me. Now, I don't know which one of those is exactly the time when God saved me, but I do know this. I can remember when I made a choice to change. And I'm going to suggest to you that that's true for you too. Because there was a time when you were an unbeliever. And if you're here now and you say you're a follower of Jesus Christ, and then you are a believer, there was a point when that changed, and I bet you know when that was. And I'm going to ask you right now to go back and identify when that time was and cling to that and understand that it had to happen. You know, down in Romans then, chapter 10, just a little bit later, there's a very powerful statement. And it says this. How are they to call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone proclaiming, telling, preaching? Someone told you. You were in unbelief, and suddenly you made a change, and you were in belief. But that didn't happen without information. Someone told you. Maybe it was your mom and dad, like in my case, sharing the Bible stories, sharing the verses. Maybe it was a brother or a sister, an aunt or an uncle. Maybe it was a neighbor down the street. Maybe it was a stranger who came and knocked on your door. Maybe it was a preacher in a church service. Maybe it was on the radio or in a movie you went to. Maybe you picked up a tract that somebody left, or maybe you got a hold of a Bible that somebody shared, but even that Bible didn't come to you randomly and by accident. Somebody had to plant it, print it, and put it in your path. Somebody shared with you. And whether directly or indirectly, someone told you. And you know what? In this responsibility from generation to generation to generation, that's what has to happen. Every generation has to be told. And who are they told by? They're told by the generation before them. That's us. And so the simple reality of the gospel is this. It's not new. It's our turn. And the message is clear because it's our story. And I want you to start by understanding your story is unbelief, change by your decision, and the chance now to go and tell others the way you were told. And there'll be all kinds of methods we can give you to help you. We can give you a Romans road, or we can give you four spiritual laws, or we can give you the bridge illustration as a pathway to Christ, and we can help you with finding. But in the end, I want to suggest to you, if you just go in and start quoting random verses to people, and it's unrelated, and it's unpassionate, and it's unlikely that it'll make a change in their lives. Oh, I know the Spirit can work, and it happens. But really what happens is when you make a connection with that person, and you start to tell them your story. And you can say to them, I know unbelief, I was there. And I know what the change looks like because I made it. And I want to tell you how you can make it too. And that's when your message becomes powerful. And here's the last thing I want to say about that. It's what Justin was just talking about. The good news, the audience is waiting to hear. And they're our neighbors. I could talk a lot about this one, and I just don't have time. I'm going to sum it up as much as I can with one simple illustration that just happened to my wife and I last night. God has a way, you know, when you're preparing to preach, He has a way of just putting you right in the middle of it. I'll just warn you right now, and I mean, it's not just preachers. If you start talking to your friends and neighbors about the gospel, God's going to put you in some interesting places. But it's worth it. So, as some of you know, we transferred my father into inpatient hospice care this week. He had a tremendously pervasive blood infection that he picked up a week ago Wednesday, and collapsed from it, septic all over. And we actually thought that we had transferred him to glory that night. He's a little more stubborn than that. He hung on a little longer, and now he's actually coming out of that. He was very able to talk to us, very clear. He didn't want to fight. He didn't want any unusual measures. He said that he was ready. So we have made the decision to transfer him into hospice care, and he's actually in the inpatient facility out at the VA. And I want to say, you know, the VA takes a lot of hits. This facility we have is a wonderful one. It's just an outstanding group of nurses and doctors and a great, very, very new, modern, excellent facility, so I'm very happy to have him there. But that's where he is, and it's just been busy. You can just imagine, it's been busy. So we have all this stuff happening here at the church, and I'm trying to transfer Dad and get him settled there, and I'm driving back and forth out to the VA every day and sometimes twice a day, and Wendy and I, we got home last night, and we were just like, and I'm thinking, got to get this ready to go for tomorrow and make sure I'm ready and rested and all that. And about 10 o'clock at night, we get some text mails from one of Wendy's relationships there in the area where she works, and it was someone who was going through an extreme crisis with their family, and as it unfolded, we realized there was nobody there with them. That the family that was going through this immediate crisis had nobody there with them. And Wendy's reading the text, and she looks at me and she says, "Did you think we should go?" And I said, "Honey, they're your relationship, they're your contact. I'll be thrilled to go with you, but I don't know. You have to know whether it's an invasion or the right time." And she says, she pulled back, and we thought about it, we prayed about it, we waited about a half an hour. Another text came through that something new had happened, and it had gotten a little more intense. And Wendy said, I think I'd just like to go and just give him a hug and tell him we care. So 10 o'clock at night, we jump up, we get in the car, we go to where these people are. We approach them. Would you mind if we stopped in for a visit? No, please come in. We had a chance to be there. We did just that. We hugged them. We talked with them. We prayed for them. We tried to support them. We let them know if there's anything they needed, that we would be there for them. They thanked us. We hugged again. We came home. Got home about midnight. I don't believe that these people know Christ the way that we talk about the personal relationship with him. This morning, I'm frankly literally brushing my teeth. I'm literally trying to get ready to come here. And Wendy comes in with her phone, and she goes, "Look at the text I got." It was from this family. And they said, "Thank you so much for coming last night. We don't know how you knew that we needed you." And why do I tell you? I'm not bragging about me. I am bragging about Wendy. I'll brag about Wendy. When we talk about being witnesses, it's not just about quoting a bunch of verses in people's face. It's about going to our neighbors and knowing who they are and reaching into their life. And then now that there's an opportunity, saying to them, "I get it. Because I'm an unbeliever too. But someone told me about the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I was willing to make the choice to change and follow him." And I can tell that story, and Wendy can tell that story, and you can tell that story, and your kids can tell that story. And that's what we do as the people of God. And it's not about the style of worship that we have. It's not about the doctrines that we teach, although those things are important. At the core of what it means to be a Christian, it's I am a witness for Jesus Christ, that he loved and redeemed me, and I want to share that with the world for which he died. So there it is, folks. That's who we are. We're the church of good news. And that good news, it's not new, but it's our turn. And that good news, the message is clear because it's our story. And that good news, the audience is waiting because they're our neighbors. And if we get that vision of our turn to tell our story to our neighbors, I promise you this, Christ will transform this church, this community, and this region for his glory. And that's the church we want to be.